The community of Gillette has seen tension recently, with plans for a Koran burning and protests over Gillette's first mosque. Writer and Pulitzer Prize winner Catherine Schultz heard this and wondered, how did a Muslim community in coal mining Wyoming come to be? She wrote an article this summer about Zarif Khan, a man from Pakistan who built a restaurant, a life, and a family in Sheridan at the turn of the century. Schultz joined Wyoming Public Radio's Caroline Ballard to talk about her story, Citizen Khan.
Catherine, thanks so much for making time to speak with me today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me on the show.
So how did you discover Zarif Khan, a.k.a. Hot Tamale Louie?
So I came at the story kind of backward. I first got wind of some much more recent events in the state of Wyoming, which was the controversy over a mosque that had opened up in the town of Gillette. And I was dismayed about the controversy, but I wasn't terribly surprised. We're hearing stories like this all over the United States right now. But what I was interested in was, well, how did this, I know a little bit about Wyoming and I'd spent some time there, and I thought, I wonder how this Muslim community wound up in Gillette, Wyoming. And in trying to answer that question, I found my way to the really remarkable story of Zarif Khan.
And for those who haven't read the piece, Khan came to Wyoming. He founded basically a restaurant business, and he's kind of the patriarch of a lot of people, a lot of Muslims that still call Wyoming home. When you write a story like this one or any of your stories, what kind of intention do you go into it with?
I'm not a news reporter. I don't work for a daily newspaper. I don't have to kind of go out and every day just report that day's events in some kind of unbiased fashion. Of course, I have my own beliefs and opinions. Of course, I choose stories that interest me personally. And this, to me, was incredibly fascinating, the kind of clash between, you know, one strand of ideas in contemporary Wyoming that really rejecting the Muslim presence, and then a history with this exact same family where, you know, one of the most interesting things about Khan is that his religion was absolutely non-controversial in his day. Now, not everything about him was. He, very interestingly, was targeted and persecuted on the basis of race. He was regarded as Asian and therefore not eligible for citizenship. In fact, was granted citizenship and then had it stripped at the federal level. And so he, you know, in a very different way, he was kind of cast out from his society and culture at the time, but that wasn't happening on the local level at all. At the local level, he was embraced, and his religion was interesting to people, but utterly non-threatening. And it's just fascinating to me that 100 years on, we've, you know, somehow come to take that same family and consider them very, very differently and regard their religion as the most salient thing about them and regard it as somehow a threat to a nation that they have been a part of for over a century.
How did you go about reporting Zarif Khan's story, especially considering that so much of it took place 100 years ago or more?
Yeah, it's a great question, and it was really challenging, actually. It was very fun, but very challenging. He does have a lot of living relatives, including all six of his children. Unfortunately, they themselves, although they were wonderful in terms of giving me a feel for their father as a person, they were all quite young when he died. And so they actually didn't have a lot in the way of the real details of, well, what was his life like? How did he get here? What was he doing in 1909 and 1919 and 1929? And I would say they were as surprised as anyone else by what the record ultimately turned out to show. So a lot of the reporting was really archival. It involved, you know, finding immigration documents and court documents and going to libraries and archives and every imaginable place in this country where any kind of documentation is stored, right down to, you know, restaurant licensing. And then to some extent, truly just talking to the older population in and around Sheridan, Wyoming, where he lived and where he established his restaurant. He was such a beloved figure that, quite frankly, almost everybody over the age of 60 remembered him, and several of them worked for him in his restaurant when they were kids and were able to tell me a lot of firsthand stories.
Catherine, Stop Islam in Gillette, the group that you mention in your story, is no more. They've sort of gone off of Facebook. You can't really find them anymore. But groups with similar sentiment are still cropping up in Wyoming and around the country. Do you expect or hope that any of those people involved in those activities would read this story and change their thinking?
You know, I'm of two minds. On the one hand, I'm not arrogant or naive enough to believe that my words are going to make a difference. At the same time, I believe that people do change, people do think twice, and something has to provide that kind of tipping point. At least one of the people I talked to that was involved in Stop Islam in Gillette turned out to, I think, have very mixed feelings themselves, and then genuinely be, as most of us are, complicated people with different kinds of sentiments depending on who they're talking to and thinking what they're thinking about in the moment. So what I do think is that culture is a collective thing, and we all contribute to it, and the more that we can kind of contribute alternative narratives and new ideas and different ways of thinking about things that are as easy to access and tap into and think about and take on as our own as these really hostile narratives, then we're doing the best we can.
Catherine Schultz is a writer and reporter. Her New Yorker piece, Citizen Khan, details the life and legacy of Wyomingite Zarif Khan. Catherine, thanks so much for speaking with us today.
Thanks for having me on.